you want anyway.
Yeah, I saw you were about to take a drink.
You know me. I take a sip, let it rip.
Who else was I going to introduce?
I don't know, you know.
Today we are covering something that is very near and dear to our hearts.
Yes. Twitch.
Twitch, yeah.
Oh, were you going to build up to it?
Yeah. I had something else I was going to say it, but sure. You know what? Actually, Iffy, because you are Twitch partnered, I feel
You know me, just young
G. You guys can't see, but he's blushing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so Twitch, we have both worked at Twitch channels, and if you don't know what that is, we're going to get into that. But I would say overall, my experience with Twitch has been extremely positive, and I feel really lucky. I've been in a lot of different fandoms and I'm nerddoms and nerd channels and sides of the internet, and Twitch is always my favorite.
Yeah, I feel like Twitch and their communities are what a lot of people hope YouTube could be, because I feel like Twitch, you really get in what you put out, and you can foster some great communities that are filled with positive people with great input who dole out, if there is any criticism, try to find a good way to do it. They aren't just there to really be horrible people.
Yeah.
Whereas I feel like YouTube comments have
the devil's playground.
Yeah, you know, they jump the shark, and it really is where people go to play and be the worst people. And I feel like it's also because of Twitch's, and we'll get to this later, but Twitch has a great mod system where you can adorn people as moderators to just instantly ban horrible people in the blink of an eye.
Yeah. In fact, when we would do a lot of our Twitch streams at some of the channels that we've been at, I wouldn't even get to see the comments. It would just say comment deleted.
Yeah.
Like before it even came up to me, the host, which is so nice, because when I'm doing or hosting a live event, the last thing I want to see is something that I'm not allowed to say right now because we're not an explicit podcast because of our personal censoring. But I loved that. I love the mods. I love that they're Twitch actually feels like a community in a way that I don't necessarily think YouTube does.
Yeah.
I feel like, Twitch feels like a family to me, the channels that I've been at.
Yeah, well, you know, let's just jump right into it and talk about what is Twitch. Twitch is an online streaming platform that is very similar to YouTube in the sense that it is a user-created content. It is
live. That's one thing.
I'm trying to find the best way to package this. It's a site filled with user-created content consumed by other users who also, just like YouTube, have an opportunity to create the same content if they liked. And I think the simplest way to describe it would be it's a website where people watch other people play video games. That's what it is at its core, at its heart. And that's where a lot of the separation and aversion to it at the beginning comes from. As a lot of people go, why would I want to watch someone else play video games? I don't know. Why would you watch someone play baseball when you can go outside, grab a baseball and do that?
Point.
Why would you watch someone play poker when you can invite friends over and play poker? Why would you? The list goes on and on. It's the same reason. And I think it originally came from wanting to watch someone more skilled than you and learn from watching them. And it's grown into something more, just like any platform where you can entertain an audience.
Well, that is a thing that I feel like a lot of Twitch streamers are doing to build their audience, is not just being good at games, but they're actually entertainers.
Oh, yeah.
So they're a lot of comedic people that have streams. And I think that people get attached to your personality. So it's not just your gameplay, but also that particular streamer. But if we're talking about where Twitch started, so when it first started, it was actually Justin.tv.
Yeah.
I don't know if anyone remembers that.
I remember Justin TV.
Yeah, Justin TV was launched in 2007 by Justin Kahn and Emmett Shear and Michael Siebel and Kyle Vogt. And the site was divided into several content categories. But what it originally was Justin Kahn, who would broadcast his life 24/7. Yeah.
Yeah. And that, what was crazy about it is I remember around this time, there was this webcam.
Yes.
You know.
Like iJustine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was just all these people who were just broadcasting their life 24/7. And Justin TV had a very good run in itself. There were a lot of, I remember people would make their own kind of talk shows and their own Howard Stern-esque radio shows using this platform.
Yeah. So how it originally started was he had a webcam that was attached to his baseball cap, and then he would stream online via this like laptop backpack setup that Kyle Vogt, who was his co-founder, also designed. And then Justin would just stream continuous live coverage 24/7. It was very like Ed TV Truman Show shit. But seriously, what did he do when he had to poop? Like, I know everybody's thinking that.
I imagine there was like a, title card, like,
yes,
it's time to poop.
I would love it if it was just like the camera was just on like a cat litter box or something that. But like if he was saying, so then what happened was he ended up opening it up to other people could then create their own channels on Justin TV. So they ended up having about 60 different channels in 2007. And by April of 2008, they had signed about 30,000 broadcasting accounts.
Yeah, that's a lot back then. I feel like now that's just the standard. You know, it's crazy. The fun part about these numbers is seeing what a lot was back then.
Right.
To see, like, you could add like two more zeros behind that.
It's so fascinating, too, that we're so obsessed with watching people, because I feel like this was also a time when, like, Big Brother, of course, was huge, and Real World, which has been around forever, which I don't know if I told you, Iffy, but I had signed up to do.
Oh, really? Signed up to do Real World?
Actually, I signed up for Next. Do you remember Next?
Oh, yeah, I remember Next.
I was 18, and my girlfriends and I loved that show on MTV, and then they didn't call me until I was 21. I think they wanted to make sure that I could drink. And they asked me to do Real World. And at the time, I was in college, and I was a journalism major. And I was like, there's no way I'm going to ruin my life. No.
Oh, wow.
And I don't even use my degree now.
Yeah, see, you could have been on Real World.
Yeah, but I didn't want my Nana to see me doing it in the shower, so.
At least you had the game, and you knew where it would end up. And you're like, I don't need Nana to see all that.
Yep.
But on Justin TV, they added selectable categories like featured, people, and live casting, sports, music and radio, gaming, news and tech, animals, entertainment, and divas and dudes. You know, very 2007. But the gaming category grew especially fast and became the most popular content on the site. And in June 2011, the company decided to spin off the gaming content as Twitch TV, inspired by the term Twitch gameplay. And it officially launched in public beta in June 6th of 2011. And since then, Twitch has attracted more than 35 million unique visitors a month. And it's mind-blowing. I just love the story of what Justin TV did, which was following what works. They were like, this gaming category is blowing up. Let's make this work. I feel like a lot of sites and a lot of companies stagnate on that. They see something cool happening on a part of their company or the site that they built, and they just think that that's going to last forever. They don't really support it, and then it dies off, or someone smarter goes and creates something for that platform. But Justin TV saw an opportunity, and I think that's a very important lesson.
Yeah, by February 2014, it was considered the fourth largest peak internet traffic in the U.S.
Oh, wow.
That's crazy.
I know. And that's what's so funny, too, is when people think that Twitch is kind of like this fringe site. It's very big.
Or underground, yeah.
And it's because Twitch in itself is international. If you go to Twitch any time of day, there's someone on it. There's someone with almost 10,000, 100,000 viewers going on the front page.
Yeah, I know the channels that we were on, we'd get international commenters all the time.
Oh, yeah.
Like, oh, I just got off from work, or I'm heading into work and it's like 6 a.m. here or whatever. So, yeah. But I agree as far as it being, I think people don't realize the extent of what you can do on Twitch now.
Yeah.
It is still largely, like Iffy said, largely a gaming channel. But I do think there are, like, Stella. If you guys listen to our cosplay episode, Stella makes her cosplay on Twitch. So that's another thing that you can do that our friends do. And Iffy and I had our Dragon Ball Super after show where we would talk about each episode of Dragon Ball Super on Twitch. So it's not just limited to gaming. And I feel like a lot of people don't realize that, because people in our community, anytime I pitch them that they should get on Twitch, they don't quite understand it.
Yeah. But it is still mostly gaming, see, because Twitch has become the most popular esports streaming service by a large margin, leading some to conclude that the website has a near monopoly on the market. And I think that is true, especially since they just signed a deal with the Overwatch League that we talked about with Malik. They have exclusivity to air it. So they're making the moves to make sure that they keep that huge monopoly on esports. Yeah. And that's kind of where their big numbers come from. Whenever ESL, which we talked about in the esports episode.
Go back and listen to
yeah,
it.
Yeah. All those big, you know, companies that do esports events, they stream it on Twitch and they're getting usually around 100,000 plus views on those videos. And I think it's just a smart move for both parties, because if you are on Twitch, you have a high likelihood of wanting to watch esports events. So if you put on esports events, you're going to want to put it on Twitch. And that's been a move. You know, YouTube gaming has made some moves here and there. Obviously, you know, they're stepping into TV with E-League, but Twitch still is the king of esports.
It is. People also watch speedrunning, which, if you don't know what that is, it's essentially a playthrough of a video game performed with the intention of, like, competing in it as fast as possible. And literally on Wikipedia, it says Twitch is designed to be a platform for hot content. So I guess that's what it's considered, hot content.
Yeah, that hot,
esports,
hot hashtag
speedrunning.
Content.
It does have a lot of non-gaming content. It does. Like, a lot of the channels and sites that Iffy and I do, we do tabletop games on Twitch, so it doesn't necessarily have to be an electronic game. There's a lot of tabletop, like, literally rolling dice and improv and stuff that takes part on Twitch. And then the site actually did stream a performance of Fester's Feast from San Diego Comic Con. That was July 2013. And then July 2014, they live streamed Steve Aoki doing a live broadcast.
Yeah, from a nightclub in Ibiza.
Ibiza.
Ibiza. That's how you say Ibiza.
Yes.
But to really jump on that, like, not just gaming, which Twitch has been making a big push out of this. In October of 2015, Twitch launched a second non-gaming category, Creative, which was intended for streams showcasing the creation of artistic and creative works. And that's when they did that very popular live stream, 24/7 live stream of Bob Ross. It was crazy, too, because this is one of the ways you got to see how great the Twitch community is when you would pop in and watch The Joy of Painting with Bob Ross, you would see people commenting on it as if it was an esports match. It was like, oh, killing this painting. And it was real funny. It was real entertaining to watch.
I want to say, for people that don't, so the Bob Ross thing, it was an 8-day marathon where they aired Bob Ross's The Joy of Painting.
Yeah.
And yeah, everyone got into it.
Yeah. So there's a meme on Twitch called Kappa. And it's a kind of sarcastic-looking white guy that's grayscale. And it's actually based off of Josh DeSano, who was an employee of Justin TV. And when they launched Twitch, they had the emotes. He was one of the emotes that were based on the Justin TV employees. And it's usually used to signify sarcasm. Since, you know, it's the internet and everyone's using text and you need a way, you would use the Kappa emote. The Bob Ross spun off into this Kappa emote with an afro to be Bob Ross, and it's and I love it. It's my favorite thing. I love Afro Kappa.
What I was gonna say is, if you listen to our cosplay episode, our esports episode, and our Comic Con episode, there is something that I don't know if we touched on, but there is TwitchCon.
Yes.
It is huge.
Oh yeah.
So that's essentially a fan convention devoted to Twitch. And I believe the first one, let's see, inaugural event was held in San Francisco, and it was September of 2015. And since then, they've also had it in San Diego.
See, mm-hmm. See, there's only been three.
And
it's
Long
actually
Beach.
Very fresh. So, like, the one after was San Diego, and then this past year was Long Beach, which I went to. It was great. It was a good time. It's fun seeing, like, you know, streamers meet the people, their audience, their communities getting together. It's a really fun event. And this year, it's going to be around the same time in October, but in San Jose. So they announced that it's in San Jose, and it's just like Comic-Con where they announced it. They announced the hotels, and the hotels are already sold out. It's wild. It's very interesting.
Yeah, we should just do a sidebar real quick because we just had Comic-Con hotel. So what happens is it is so busy at some of these cons that you have to actually enter a lottery. Yeah. Like, the hotels have set it up with the con, at least for Comic-Con they did. And we just had that lottery like this past week. But essentially, you have to wake up in the morning and log in and get put into the lottery to see if you can even get a hotel.
Yeah,
it's that. So it's not a monopoly, essentially, on people buying them up, like companies and stuff. Everyone has kind of, not all the time, but everyone kind of has an equal opportunity, even though there are a lot of companies that have deals with hotels because I know them.
Well, yeah. That's what's so funny is after you brave the internet and fight your way and get a pass, you still have to worry about fighting for a hotel room or be doomed to take the train down to downtown San Diego every day from...
Oh my God, no. Yeah. Don't do that.
Yeah, a lot of people, they'll take the train from like...
Every
Oceanside.
Day?
Yeah.
Oh, from the Oceanside is better, maybe. Yeah. I can't imagine coming from LA.
Oh yeah, no, that's not
You
fun.
Can Airbnb technically if mm-hmm. you want to spend like hundreds upon hundreds of dollars. Yeah. Or you can sleep in your car.
Yeah. What's good is I want to talk about some hot Twitch goss, which is going to be great because it's going to link up with the third type of a non-gaming category that Twitch launched, which was IRL, which is IRL is an internet acronym for in real life. And it's basically a streamer who streams live. It basically came full circle and it is just like Justin TV. The reason I say is it comes full circle is one of the popular things for IRL streamers is to have a streaming backpack and use it from the hat. It's so funny. I never knew about the Justin TV doing that. So to see that
came full circle.
Yeah. It came full circle. But the reason I'm bringing it up around the same time I brought TwitchCon, there was a little, you know, spicy beef that happened between the IRL streamers and the regular streamers at TwitchCon, mostly because at the TwitchCon party, it was a lot of streamers just hanging out, chilling, meeting other streamers for the first time. But IRL streamers, they were still on the job in their eyes.
What? And they were, yeah, streaming.
Yeah, they were streaming at the party.
Oh, and no, that's bad
news. A lot of people were complaining a lot because it was very much like popping right next to someone and being like, I'm here with so-and-so.
Yeah.
And so it was a whole debate that went on online because what happened was the DJ hopped on the loudspeaker and was like, no streaming is allowed in here. They had to shut it down. I actually, on my stream, if you go, I captured the moment where that happened because I was IRL streaming because I was like, everybody's streaming, why don't I do it? And you just hear the DJ was like, streaming is not allowed in this building. It was a very big kerfluffle.
I understand that. One, I mean, you are at TwitchCon, so of course there's going to be streamers there. But also, I mean, you're at the after party.
Yeah.
People are getting drunk. People are making bad decisions. They do not need those live streamed for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So I get it. That's like such a taboo thing. It's like when we go to parties and people are like asking famous people for pictures.
Look, here's the thing. You do it.
No, I know you don't care. I see yours.
The reason I don't care is because I pull back because I'm like, yeah, maybe I'll send it to like my sketch team's group text and they're like, you in there taking pictures. And then you'll go and you'll see the other celebs who did the same thing with each other. And I'm like, see, it wasn't weird. It was, but I think it's just like,
it's a case-by-case basis.
Exactly. You got to meet people where they are. People, and ask. Just don't be doing the thing where you're like, selfie time.
Oh, yeah, where you're like eating at dinner and you're trying to get the person that's sitting behind you.
Yeah, no, you just got to be like, hey, do you mind snapping a pic? And usually they're like, yeah, cool, because you asked, and I can pose for it, and I don't get caught off guard and look like I have a double chin in this
pic. Oh, my gosh, Iffy, I have to send you, there's this guy that I follow, and all he does is take pictures with celebrities in parking garages. I'm not kidding. It is so
creepy.
I need to send it to you because they all just look like they're about to be kidnapped.
Yeah, they're like, what is going on?
I think he finds them after screenings or whatever Q&As that they have at ArcLight. I'm totally okay. You guys come here for the hot gossip. You come here to learn And know the future of tech and stuff. And you also come here for our hot goss.
Yeah, yeah. So that's some hot spicy goss. I gotta send it to
you. You're gonna be some of the celebrities look so dead in the eyes, yeah, and he's just like smiling because no one wants to be asked to take a picture when they're going to their car.
Yeah, because they're just thinking it's finally over.
It's finally over. I answered your freaking Q&A.
Before we're almost to the break, and I want to break down the two, maybe three main type of streamers who stream games. The first one is pretty easy to guess. It's your solo streamer. It's someone who's sitting at home in front of their computer, usually with one or two PCs to stream for you. It's very personal. They're able to build a community around themselves. And I think it just goes from there. It's a real personal experience. Because you're having a one-on-one experience. And I think this is where it separates, you know, the YouTube and Twitch audience, where I feel like the YouTube audience come to be entertained. That's their mindset. Whereas like your Twitch audience, they're there for the interactive aspect. Mm-hmm. And that's what Twitch gives their audience over the YouTube audience, is you're interacting with people real time. You're actually controlling the story of the stream, because if something you do, if like I remember I was watching someone stream and someone donated $1,000, and that just changes the mood. It changes everything that they're talking about, because now they're like, you just kind of change their life in that 1 second.
Yeah, we should talk about that Twitch has the ability for people to donate. And with the role-playing games and the tabletop games that Iffy and I did when we were hosts at Hyper RPG, they would, which is a Twitch channel in a studio, which we're going to get into. But people could donate for our players and characters to get like weapons or plot points, which is essentially allowing our character to, you know, move forward in the story or whatever. But people could donate for us to do stuff or to like talk in a funny accent or something. So people would donate, would give money to our stream on Twitch. And then Iffy and I would talk in a funny accent or do, you know, whatever, play this certain character. So that is an extremely interactive part and could be lucrative as well.
Yeah,
part
but of Twitch. Just on top of that, Twitch does have a very big reputation for their charity. By 2013, the website has hosted events in which in total raised over $8 million in donation to charitable causes. And that's just the ones they're tracking. And they've actually linked up with a lot of charitable organizations like Extra Life, which has a very big presence on Twitch, because they do a thing where any streamer, whether you're small or big, can sign up on their website, and it kind of signal boosts people through the website of people who are streaming and raising money for their cause. Like it's crazy. I think it's way more than 8 million because there's so many.
Oh yeah, that was back in 2013.
Yeah. So by now, I think it's way more.
Yeah, yeah. Even the channels that we have hosted at have had charity, like 24-hour charity events and stuff. And people will essentially donate money, and that entire money goes to the charity. And then they'll have you know, we're entertainers, so they'll donate money, and then we'll play a song for them, or we'll do, you know, whatever. We've had puppets and people like that. And so
and
moving into
the second type of streamers, you keep hearing Danny say the places we stream at, the places you might be wondering, like, well, you know, I had in mind the solo streamer. What are you talking about? Well, there are studios that actually stream on Twitch. You have Geek and Sundry. Nerdist used to stream on Twitch. The Attack formerly streamed on Twitch. You have
Machinima. A Twitch channel, Hyper RPG.
Polygon is on there sometimes. So those Twitch efforts are very different than the solo stream, because it's a studio with multiple people. And instead of being a one-on-one kind of relationship, you're more kind of learning to love the brand. And they kind of put in their work in trying to build up the community as well. And there are tons of ways to build community. There's a Discord, which is like a free, very similar. If you're using Slack, it's basically like a gamer version of Slack, which is a messaging platform where you can join a chat room. And they already have Twitch integration, where if you're subscribed to a channel, you'll have access to that Discord. So there's so many different ways, and the studio is a lot larger. It may seem daunting at first, but lots of times people break off and they have their favorites at the studio. They have their favorite people, and then they connect through Twitter. It's very connected in the Twitch world, because a lot of times it bleeds out to Twitch. It's a family.
Yeah. I would say Discord super helps with that.
Yeah.
Like Iffy was saying, Discord is a community. Essentially, like, you can have it as an app on your phone where whatever channels you're subscribed to, you can kind of just chat with people.
Yeah.
And there's different categories in there. We had one, I remember at Hyper, called Hugs. And it was just like, if you were having a bad day or whatever. And it was literally just community members building each other up, people talking about their problems in there. And that's why it really does feel like a family. Like, there's nothing like that really on YouTube that I feel like.
Yeah, not at all.
So we're going to get more into the future of Twitch and also how possibly you can get Twitch partnered.
Ooh.
Right after this.
Right after this.
We're back. Yes.
You know, I've been listening to our episodes, and we keep doing that. We keep doing the "we're going to talk at the same time" thing.
We'll figure it out. We're still new.
Look, I like it, but I don't know how people are like. Let us know. Tweet at us. Do you like that we talk at the same time like those?
Or do you like if we talk like this? I thought you were going to continue talking so we could talk over each other.
Oh, yeah. I know. That's probably the
worst. And here we go. We're just...
Look, our guest is just sitting here while we just go back
he's
and forth.
He's used to it.
Yeah.
He knows us very well.
That's someone who knows us super well.
It's part of the family.
Oh, man. It's just heavy credentials. This is the man to talk to about Twitch. He's built one of the biggest Twitch empires out here. We talked about Studio Twitch and Solo Twitch. He's been the leader of a lot of the Studio Twitches, brought him into the game, and he's just surpassed me because I noped out because he's one of those business guys.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just say his name so we can introduce him. Zach Eubank.
Oh, crap.
You tried it.
It was a failed attempt, but it was close.
Yeah. You have done so much before Twitch. Like, it's almost unfair to just say it's a Twitch thing because you have a production company. You did commercials. That's where I met you. I met him outside of Twitch, and he just happened to be this dope producer. We worked on an all deaf digital shoot.
That was fun.
Yeah.
That was a 12-hour turnaround.
Oh, man. Yeah, that was... And it came out really well. It's still, like, it keeps bouncing back to me because it was on Tumblr, and it's still making the rotation. It's, like, millions of notes.
Yeah, Zach, how did you get started in the industry? What did you move out? Because you moved to L.A.,
yeah,
right?
Like, you know, most people from the Midwest just pick up, move out, decide to start, you know, hanging out around UCB and be like, you guys want to shoot stuff?
Did he move out here to direct or produce?
Primarily. And I got my first foot in the door right when I came out, got on a really big shoot, and immediately realized I was an idiot. I got yelled at a lot. I got cussed off of the set and was fired.
Wow.
And that was great. Dang. I needed that so bad. Because I'd been from a small town in the Midwest where it's just like, I know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Self-taught, figured it all out. Very first shoot I'm on, I get fired off that set and kicked off because I did not know what to do as a second AC. And I was just I want to do all this stuff. And I would go up to the DP and I'd be like, oh, what's your F stuff and all this stuff? And he's like, bro, what are you... Get back. You're not supposed to talk to me. I am out of my league. I don't know what's going on. So it was great. I loved it. And then that forced me back into the books. And because I didn't have a film background. And, you know, there's that big mystery when you're in the Midwest. Like, if you didn't study it in school, it's all a huge mystery. Like, what is this world? How do you get into it? So just had to jump in and make a lot of failures. And same with Twitch, I guess, too, actually.
Yeah. Then you had the production company, Aren't We Clever, and you've done lots of dope stuff, worked with lots of dope people. Yeah, and then, because we did a shoot called All Deaf Digital, but it was something where we were addressing just how they ignore the racism in the name Redskins. That was great. But then he did this thing with this production company called A Brunch once a month?
No, every weekend.
Yeah, every
Literally every Sunday.
Yeah, he did a brunch.
Industry
it was
brunch.
Great. People do it like it's very underground, but like it was the first I've been to, but it's like an industry brunch where you'd like invite his industry friends. You can network, you can eat. They made the biggest dope
spread. You still kind of do that.
I still kind of
do. You do that at Hyper.
Yeah.
I definitely do that.
I cook for everybody. Like, I like to cook for people.
And then you invite people.
Because then I don't have to talk to you.
But you also invite a lot of people from other channels and stuff to come and meet.
Yeah, and so from that, when I went to the brunch, I learned he was a huge nerd, and then I fell in love with Zach. I was like, oh, fellow nerd, you know, love this guy. I knew this guy, and he wanted to do this, like, launch this Twitch channel with Greg Grunberg called Socialtron Live.
Well, you were the one that invited me.
Yeah.
So I didn't even know about this.
Yeah.
This was a totally new world. I didn't know about Twitch at all. It's something I just heard about. I had known about Justin TV before that, mm-hmm. but that was only when I wanted to watch something illegally. go to Justin TV to watch it live.
Yeah.
That's all I knew. And I remember slightly hearing about it switching over to Twitch, but I didn't really know anything. And you invited me to go check this place out.
Because when I was there, they were like, if you know anybody who would love this, you should invite them. And I just met this cool nerd who also does film stuff. So I invite Zach, and he just comes in, and he's like, he's a nerd for cameras as much as he's a nerd for everything. So he immediately was like, oh, this could be so much better. And just went in one of those like savant rambles. And they were just like,
You're fun at parties,
yes,
Zach.
Oh,
yes.
No, definitely not. That's when I'm in my element. Just shut up and listen to me, nerd out. No, that's unfortunately true. But yeah, though, that was really great. That was an interesting experience because mm-hmm. that was, you exposed me to my first sight of Twitch and what it was like. And that was a neat thing. But I go back sometimes and I watch that very first time that we were sitting there. It's crap. It's terrible. Yeah. It's so bad. But while I was sitting there, I can remember just thinking about, like, wow, this is so neat. There's so much you could do with this. Mm-hmm. And we're just sitting here like two idiots making fun of each other, which is fun in and of itself.
Yeah.
It's fun. But it just felt like there was so much more mm-hmm. that platform was allowing. And the more questions I asked, the more I got back answers like, I don't know. Maybe you could do that. I don't know. Maybe. I was like, wait. So you're telling me that I can push out to this server. I'm not paying for that space, because that was my first big question. I was like, this is live? Who's paying for that?
Yeah.
Where's all that data coming from? And when I learned that the chat was an open API and that you could build tools into that chat room, then my brain went nuts.
Yeah.
I was just like, man, there's so much you could do. And still to this day, I'm always thinking like, well, what could you do? How could you play with that, you know?
Yeah. But so eventually Socialtron Live kind of fizzled out in its own way. And I just get a call from Zach and goes, hey, have you heard of this company, Geek & Sundry? So I'm working with them and I'm launching a Twitch channel. Do you want to be a part of it? And I was like, yeah, already. But little do we know how that was going to explode into a huge thing.
That's great, because basically that first round of hires was all of my friends that we'd been working with on sketches for mm-hmm. UCB and stuff for the first couple rounds. And I remember fighting for you guys too. And be like, no, it'll be great. You need improvisers for this kind of content.
Yeah.
Right.
Especially for that first round of content. It was all hanging out with us on the couch.
Yeah.
You need people who can comfortably keep it moving,
right.
keep it going. Because watching live content is actually really boring unless you work really hard to make it not boring.
Yes.
So I was really adamant on, I wanted my UCB friends in there. And it's crazy now to think how that's affected everyone's careers and where people are now, and like what that was like when we first started. It was such a fun, neat, literally was just like, hey, here's five or six people hanging out on the couch and we're just gonna make bits for hours.
You know what I was gonna say, if you going back to our esports episode, is something that I realized watching some of the commentators is like, just because you know video games really well does not mean you're entertained. Zach, you can't see his face right now, but that is so, and I totally agree. It's so great to have people that have a comedy background and actually like to fill space. Like, the worst thing I feel like in live programming is just dead air,
it's
dead
the worst.
Space. It is. And so it's like, you can be a total nerd and be really great and geek out over these things, but you also have to be an entertainer for people to want to stay on the stream.
Yeah. And I want to make it really clear, I'm not dissing anyone who's a single streamer. I think that part of the reason my companies have never tried to do that is there's people who do it so well. There's certain people out there like your Co-Carnages and stuff who can go live and you're just like captivated by them and
they
do such a great job with it. I would never want to compete in that space. We're trying to do stuff that's using the platform to do something different and cool, but not infringe on that space or even try to act like anything in that space is bad or less. It's difficult. It's really hard. That's why so many people try it and fail. It's a difficult space.
Yeah. Oh, man.
So fast forward to you with Hyper RPG.
Yeah.
So what year was that and how did that start taking off?
It took off because I was really unhappy at Geek & Sundry. and I had Malika, my fiance, who we work with a lot on the channel, she brought Jordan Weissman out to one of the shows we're doing on Geek & Sundry because he was the guy who created HeroClix. And I was a big HeroClix fan. And
for people that don't know, what is HeroClix?
It's a tabletop game where you get to play as superheroes. It's super nerdy, awesome. It's great. It's amazing.
I feel like every episode we find a thing that now there needs to be an episode about.
Oh, so deep.
Yeah.
But he created it. So and Malika was like, hey, he's my teacher, you know, or my professor. You should have him on. So he came by and immediately you could see he was like, oh, I'm in headhunter mode. And he was asking a lot of questions that were very clear. Like, he's got something on his mind. And then he invited me out for lunch the next week. And he was like, so I've heard through the grapevine you're not happy. I'm like, oh, great.
Publicly. You know, before this, Zach and I were talking that, like, we both show our true colors really mm-hmm. well.
Yeah.
If we don't like someone, you know it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I'm really bad at lying.
Yeah, same.
I can't. So if somebody's like, how are you doing right now? I'm like, don't ask. And so then he was like, well, why don't you quit that and start a Twitch company with me? I was like, okay, fine. Yeah, sounds great.
Yeah.
So I laid out all the ideas that I had been pushing for last year that we hadn't got to try. And I was like, as long as we can go for this, totally down. And it's a huge risk. I mean, I had the stability and comfort of working for a major studio that's owned by Legendary. And walking away from that's really difficult. Okay, that's a lie. It was really easy to walk away. But difficult to walk away from stability.
Yeah.
And to try to start something completely new that's completely untested. It doesn't have any celebrity backing. It doesn't have any large marketing. You know, we basically started the company with $100,000 and just said, let's go for it. And we have not shut down yet.
Yeah.
We've been going for over 2 years now. From that $100,000, we've been able to keep it moving. And doesn't mean that it's like, yeah, money's rolling in.
Yeah.
But just to survive with that little of a startup cost has felt like a success in and of itself.
Oh, yeah.
And
so when you said that you had like these core ideas that you wanted, what were those that you came in with? Like, I want to do this and this is what I want to see on this channel.
I wanted to get the audience more involved. One of the key things I thought was missing from my first round of big studio programming, I say big studio, for Twitch it's big studio programming, was that the shows still felt like there was a barrier. And I think the biggest strength of Twitch is that you're becoming one with the audience. You're an active representation of their likes and their interests. And if you're not involving them, you're failing. To me, Twitch is a dialogue and not a monologue. YouTube is a monologue. TV is a monologue. You're putting that content out there. This, in a way, is a monologue. You get a little bit back from your social media and stuff like that, but Twitch is literally a dialogue. It's real time. It's right in your face. And there's an active chat room for them.
Yeah, I want to actually stop you right there because that's something we were touching on earlier, which is the big difference of Twitch and kind of where this excitement behind it comes from is, like you said, and I think you said it way better than I described it, but yeah, it's a dialogue and people get to be interacting, and there's no way to talk about Hyper without getting into interactivity, so we'll even get deeper into that soon, but just for the listeners, that's your main core difference between like Twitch and your YouTubes and what have you, and I think that is true. If you're not communicating with your chat, you are failing, and in small little ways that the audience is coded, like when I do my own solo stream, the first thing someone will do before they even follow will be like, hey, just to see if you'll talk to them. Mm-hmm. Because if you don't talk to them, they'll leave.
They'll leave. They'll go to somebody else. Yeah. They want to be recognized.
Exactly. And the moment you're like, oh, hey, so-and-so, how you doing? Boom, a follow right there. But that's just how ingrained it is to that user base. And I wish I could remember, but someone was saying that this is the next phase of online content.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I 100%. It's something that's part of the reason I'm pushing for it so hard, is I think that it is the next phase of media. And you're seeing companies out there now. There's a show on CBS that has a live version for the East and the West Coast, and they live tweet why it's out. Because you're getting that real-time feedback. It's kind of, as we distance ourselves more and more online and we become less and less in touch with each other, I feel like the pendulum swings back towards like, I need something. I need to feel like I'm a part of something. So you have these big online games that do really well, but you also have Twitch where you feel like you're a part of something. Your voice matters. You go deeper than just that too. The subcultures that exist even on one person's channel. You know, our Discord room has 30 different rooms in it, and each room sometimes has its own small subculture of these are the things we're interested in. We found each other through this like-minded thing. We just want a voice. We want to know we're not alone. You know, I think – I don't want to say that everyone on Twitch is lonely because that's not true.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of lonely people in the world right now who feel that they're missing some sort of connection there. And being able to provide someone that next step in entertainment where you're not just sitting there watching Netflix alone and eating a bag of chips. You know, you're watching Netflix with your friends and in real time commenting back and forth on what you're experiencing. My idea for Hyper was, okay, now you're watching Netflix with your friends and you're real time watching. What if you could press a button on your remote to make something happen in that show live and interactively that contributes to the story as it's happening, and you recognize that was me, I did that, I'm important, my voice matters. So that's kind of what we built the whole company around, was that level of
interaction. I was going to say, like, but as a content creator, though, do you feel like having constant feedback can ever be a hindrance?
Oh,
or does
yeah.
it feel like you now can't just make what you want to make and you have 100%. To kind of, yeah, how do you deal with that?
At first, a lot of anxiety. Now, very freeingly. I think it took a long time coming from production to get used to this idea that pre-production doesn't matter as much as real-time production and what's happening in the moment and responding and reacting to it like an improviser. I've learned more from my improviser friends and watching their shows and how you guys perform and react to things in real time than I have from any other type of media, because it's about that feedback loop and making sure that you're adapting your content to the feeling that's happening in the moment. And it can be really tough. And when you empower your audience to this level, and I would say from a studio standpoint, why it's probably you're seeing this happen with them when they open up their Twitter and things like that too. When you empower your audience to a certain extent, there comes negatives to that, which is they think that they know better than you because they're so involved. They're so connected to it. They think all of a sudden, well, this is mine just as much as it's yours and you should take my advice. We constantly battle that, and we try to give people other opportunities to feel like their voice is heard, even if we have to tell them from time to time, I'm sorry, but in this instance, we know better. We have to say that this is how it's going to be done. This is the thing we're going to do. Sometimes it's trusting analytics and telling them very honestly and openly. Our analytics actually show that even though you, a couple of you, are very loudly saying this doesn't work, it doesn't work, it doesn't work, analytically, we're seeing better retention by doing this, this, and this. That's something we also try to do because there is that dialogue feedback loop. Very honestly tell the audience this is what's happening in that moment, which is very scary for a studio or a business to just out in the open say, hey, so last week we did this thing. It failed. Here's why it failed. Here's the responses we got from it. Here's all these things. We saw that you didn't respond to it the way we wanted, so we're going to make these changes. And
yeah, I remember when I joined the channel, when Iffy and I joined Hyper RPG, you were very upfront about the financials.
Oh, yeah.
Do you feel like that was an important part of like keeping this community feel?
Yes, I think it's very important. It's basically like a live Kickstarter. Now, not every company should do it this way. That's just the way we chose to do it. But using Twitch as a platform to embrace that attitude. If you get to the heart of it, why would I hide it? That's not what Twitch is about. Twitch is very voyeuristic in that way. So if we're going to run a company, we're going to have to run that company voyeuristically and let them behind a little bit and tell them exactly what's happening and not hide anything. And what ends up happening is they end up supporting you more because you're a real person. They
yeah,
trust you.
Yeah.
They see that you're not just taking money and spending it recklessly.
Right.
You're just trying to make cool stuff and do really cool content. And we feel people support that
yeah.
on Twitch, which is to me, that's so cool. The future of entertainment in a way, like you pay for what you think is worth it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I remember being in our Discord and people would be like, I want to buy Zach. Like, he works so hard. I would just want to buy him a movie ticket. And like people, because they would see you 24/7, you know, on the stream, like constantly working all these shows. I think people got, you were a part of their family because they saw you every single day. And I just remember it was like, I want to take him and Malika like on a date. And like, I feel like all he does is work.
It gets weird. It's a weird line.
Yeah, but they're so invested in you. And I feel like a lot of people, you know, wish that they could have that with their fans or with their community members.
Yeah. What's also interesting too is I feel like, you know, Twitch, the window is kind of on both sides, which is like you get a chance to kind of know the people who are watching you, the people who are seeing you. And it's very interesting because I remember when I mentioned Twitch to people who aren't in the know, which is AKA other people in Hollywood who I often are like, they're like, what? There's often this idea that like these are like, you know, these nerdy kids watching it, because the time you'll see it in public are kids who will have their iPad in public and they're watching Minecraft videos and all this. But what they don't know is it's actually a pretty diverse age-wise group of people. They're just full-grown adults, people with jobs, people. And I think it's just because people can't understand the concept of watching them. Sometimes they're not watching.
I get it.
Sometimes
when I first discovered it too, I was like, what is this? Why would I get into it? And it took me a little bit to understand it. And I think that's the biggest challenge in it, is the learning curve for a viewer.
Yeah.
The UI is not that intuitive. You know, like they're making updates to it all the time. But the biggest thing we get back from new viewers that are coming in is, I don't get this. I can't, what am I supposed to be looking at? What's going on? I'm always trying to tell people, like, get in that chat room. Just say something in our community. You'll get feedback and you'll find you're tweeting at us. Obviously you like this content.
Yeah.
Go in the chat, just say hi. And they're nervous too because it's a very intimidating platform because it's not as inviting as the simplicity of opening up your Netflix account or going to YouTube is a much more natural kind of thing.
Oh, yeah.
Twitch feels a little bit more gatekeeped in a way from its own UI and its own setup. There is something on Twitch for every type of nerd, literally. But you wouldn't know that if you just went to Twitch.tv. You're going to be like, oh, so everybody here just plays Fortnite and, and Overwatch and League of Legends. And that's all you would know.
Yeah, that's very
true. That's all you would know. And you would walk away thinking, this isn't for me. But if you spent just a little bit of time, you searched or tried to find what you were looking for, you're going to find your people. And that's what I love about it. It is tough, though. It is hard to find them. It's difficult.
I think that is something worth mentioning. Yeah. When you go to Twitch, there is a hero page with, I don't even want to say top streams, but selected streams are put on the front page. Mm-hmm. Some of those positions are paid for. Some are handpicked. And through that, you would assume you get an idea of the makeup of Twitch, but it's not really the case. Like you said, if a new game comes out, say you come out on a Friday where a new game drops, you're going to think Twitch is everyone streaming this game.
Yeah.
Because 9 times out of 10, if you're a front page streamer, you're going to be playing the newest game. That's just the way it goes. But it's more than that.
And they're trying to make updates to their discoverability platform, but they're definitely... The other thing right under the hero player you see is top games.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always going to be a very specific 4 or 5 at the top. It's very seldom.
You already said it.
I know. If there's a StarCraft tournament, it'll pop up to the top again. Or if World of Warcraft drops an update, it'll jump up to the top again. And that creates this self-fulfilling prophecy with streamers too, where, well, the only way I'm going to get seen then is if I'm playing Fortnite because it's at the top. So Fortnite just keeps getting bigger because... Oh. They'll log in and they'll be like, well, if I'm going to stream a game, I better stream Fortnite because that's what everyone's watching.
Yeah.
I'm not saying everyone does this, but that's one of the best tactics to find new viewers because that's what everyone's watching.
And that's very true. And I want to, if you are a solo streamer trying to start up and you're curious, I want to implore that you do not do that. You get lost in that. And just to even go more in depth with it, so you see, basically you see the quote-unquote cover of the game and the amount of viewers watching it.
Yeah.
And if you are a viewer, you click it, and then it ranks all the streamers streaming it, but it's from order of the most viewers to the least. So if you are a new streamer, you're going to be all the way at the bottom. However, if you have a game that you like that's niche and you click that, the community for that game is going to find you a lot easier. I play games like Dauntless, which doesn't have a big community. And I usually only have about like 20, 30 viewers, but I'm at the top because I'm one of the few streamers.
Which means you're going to have a much higher percentage chance of someone finding you
exactly.
if you're at the top. But even then, I would say anyone who's wanting to try it out, just do what you love.
Exactly.
Because it's live content and you can't fake for very long on live content. People will see through you.
Oh, yeah.
So you better do what you love. If you're trying to play a game just to be popular or to be at the top, they're going to see through it eventually. Do what you love, what you know the most about, what you know. One of my favorite people in the world, Jim Stuart Allen. Did you get to meet him when you went up to Seattle?
I did not.
He's
going to
be in town Friday night. He's doing an Oregon Trail RPG with us, which is going to be ridiculous. But Oregon Trail is his thing. That's what he loves. And he went on Twitch and streamed Oregon Trail for like over 200 days straight every day. He just did the same very first Oregon Trail over and over and over again. But he's so passionate about it and what he loves, it's really fun to watch and it's really interesting. And he found an audience from that. And he found some gigs from that. And he found some other work from that because that's what he loves. And I think you have to do that.
Yeah, yeah. And speaking of passion, I know your community is very passionate, but we'll get into that right after the break. And we are back. Hello. Welcome back to Nerdificent. I'm Iffy Wadiwe.
I'm Danny Fernandez.
And sitting
we are
right
here.
Next to us.
It's me. Zach Eubank, yes. So we were talking about the community.
Yeah.
Does it fluctuate for you, like your numbers, or how does that work? Because Twitch is something that you have to pay for every month, or
if you're
like
a subscriber.
Okay.
You don't have to subscribe. The content's free for anyone.
So anyone can watch your shows live. live. So what are the added benefits of subscribing?
For us in particular, a lot of people don't do this. And we used to get a lot of flack for it, but we get less flack now as more people have started signing on to do this. We put our VODs behind a sublock.
And for people that don't know, VODs?
Video on demand. So the recording of what we just did. Say you're a European viewer and we have a live show at 6 p.m. You don't want to get up at 9 a.m. that morning or, you know, 4 a.m., whatever it is, to watch. You want to go to bed. So you're like, well, I'll catch the VOD in the morning. We sublock ours, which, you know, does suck for those viewers who want to be able to see it as quickly as possible, who just unfortunately don't live in the right time zone. The sad truth of the situation is running a business costs a lot of money. Mm-hmm. We pay all our talent. We try to do everything right as a company. And we just have to, from a financial standpoint, we have to lock our VODs. But not everyone does that. That's a choice, which is ultimately one of the things I like about Twitch. I have control over things like that. If a streamer doesn't want to sublock their VODs, they don't have to. You get access to emotes when you sub. You get access to other special features as designed by the streamer. So it's kind of up to the streamer what they want behind that subscription.
Oh, that's cool.
It's a good way to go about it, I think.
And it's pretty cool, too, because, like you said, it's optional. So if someone doesn't want to stream, it's like, you know, or, you know, if someone's not in the financial place to subscribe, then they can still enjoy it. But, you know, it is really cool when you do.
And, I mean, they keep releasing new tools to allow that to be easier for people, too. Because, I mean, ultimately, it's one of the easiest ways to support a streamer and say, I like this content.
Oh, yeah.
It's like
signing up
for Hulu. It's like signing up for Netflix or saying, I want to give this person $5 a month to say I support you and I want you to keep making this kind of content. And Twitch keeps releasing new tools that make it easier for people to do, like Twitch Prime.
Oh, yeah.
You link your Amazon account with your Twitch account and you get a free subscription every month to give to a streamer of your choice. It doesn't auto-renew, so you have to remember to go back into the channel.
And to add to that, they added a new extension where it can do it. The only thing is it's an overlay extension. So
it doesn't auto-renew, though. It's just a pop out that's just like, don't forget.
Yeah.
Which I get. I mean, Amazon's a business too. You can't just enable that. Then it wouldn't have existed in the first place. Yeah. It's just like Amazon Prime. They're betting on you forgetting to get free shipment every single time.
That's
how you get it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Same thing. It's, you know, most people forget to use it. That's how it pays off for the people who don't forget. And the other thing they just released is gifting subs, which people have been asking for a long time.
Man.
That happens all the time
so
in our channel where somebody's like, oh, I'm from here. I'm having a rough month right now. I really wish I could subscribe. Boom, someone will gift it to them immediately.
Yeah.
Just by that sense of community of like, I got you. I got $5. You can have it.
It's such a different community than YouTube.
Yes.
And I know you, so Zach, you actually work to help people that are trying to transition from YouTube to Twitch. So how about like how, I know that we were talking a little bit as far as how people get started with a Twitch channel. And can you also talk a little bit about how you get Twitch partnered?
Yeah, luckily it's really a lot easier now
to get
partnered for Twitch. It used to be much more up in the air. It wasn't really clear set rules. They've done a better job now of saying, these are the requirements. If you meet these requirements, you'll get partnered.
Yeah.
You get this many hours watched, you stream this many hours a week, you have this kind of current level of viewer base, you'll get partnered. So you just got to hit those goals. And those goals are available on their website and within your Twitch user.
Yeah, they do it as achievements. And after every stream, you actually see your progress. It's actually really, really cool because it was like back in the day, it was how do you get partnered? And there were
tough.
It was rough. Yeah.
Well, so then what are the benefits of being partnered and how do you get like on
you
the front
paid.
Page? Oh, you get paid. Okay.
I mean, that's you don't. People can't subscribe to you if you're not a partner. Well, now they have affiliates, which kind of work like that.
Okay.
But
there
are benefits to being a partner, lots of benefits, actually. So it's definitely a goal that you want to hit, including like special events with Twitch, getting invited to participate in things with them. You know, they try really hard to take care of their partner base. They've been growing exponentially, so I think that's been a challenge for them because they're growing so fast and they're partnering a lot of people. It's hard to keep everyone happy.
I was just smiling because I realized that I had two shows on your channel and I never had to worry about any of this. Like, I don't even know the behind the scenes. That's what happens sometimes when you get to host at a studio channel is there's people like Zach taking care of everything.
Oh, yeah.
We worry about that stuff day in and day out.
So
we
I just
want you guys
up
to have fun.
And I did. So as far as people moving from YouTube to Twitch, I see a lot of studios trying to do that now, and people, but also
because Twitch is asking them to.
Oh, okay.
And I won't dive into any specifics to keep from getting in trouble,
right?
Because of NDAs and stuff. But I know that right now, that's kind of it's an interesting space in the live world right now because Mixer, Facebook are both trying to buy people out of their Twitch contracts.
And I know a few people there was someone, I won't name them because I don't know if they want all their business out like that, but I was going to invite a streamer, and unfortunately that streamer is not on Twitch anymore, but because
I probably know you're
Facebook,
talking about.
Yeah, and they
wait, you guys mouth it to me.
It was because they didn't know that when you are a partner, you are exclusive to Twitch. You can only stream yourself playing video. There's like little kind of ways around, like if you're not streaming you playing video games on like a different platform like Facebook, but like when you're like committing to like Facebook gaming and you're streaming the same way you would as you would on Twitch, you are in breach of your contract.
I get asked this all the time. Why don't you guys live stream this to YouTube? Why, I want to watch on YouTube. I want to watch on YouTube. I'm like, I'm not going to breach my contract.
Right, I have
a contract. And I'm also not at liberty to talk about what's in that contract. Yeah. But basically, you know, right now it's kind of the Wild West because, which is great because it's putting power into the content creators' hands a little bit more. But Facebook's buying people out. Mixer will offer people deals. And, you know, YouTube is in a position where people are flooding away from YouTube.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Twitch is coming and being like, you should come to my platform. You know, come over here.
But do you think that's going to bring some of the toxicity with it?
Yes,
I feel like it's been such a nice community to
But it's
be
up
on...
to you. Yeah. That's the difference with Twitch and YouTube is they give you the tools and it's up to you to enact them.
Right.
And they've just released some stricter guidelines, which some of those people that are coming over, and I won't name names, they're going to find themselves in trouble because their communities will get them banned from Twitch.
Oh,
if Twitch lives up to their end of those partner agreements,
okay,
the way their communities act.
I know who you're talking about.
Yeah. So it used to just be what you did on screen resulted in you getting punished for it. There's some new rules now where if your community is doing things, you can be held responsible for that. Because if you're not putting a stop to it, you have the ability to. They've really given you those tools.
That's what I want to talk about because there are so many toxic communities that people turn a blind eye to because they're getting numbers. But it is very true that as a content creator, you are in control of what your community puts out.
Yes.
Your community can only do what you allow.
Yep.
If your community is saying slurs and being
racist,
ignorant,
to the
and
host.
All this stuff, it's because you're not banning those people.
Yep.
So you're only making it worse because other people are seeing that happen. It's like, oh, that's cool here. Let's go. Yep. But it's when you...
And some of them are 14-year-old boys that don't understand how people talk in the real world.
Oh, yeah.
Completely honest. They think this is the culture of Twitch. I saw other people say this on another channel. So they just come in... And they say stuff and they don't realize, oh, that's bad.
Oh, yeah.
What do you mean I can't call a girl a grill? I was like, no.
Yeah, oh, man.
You can't do that.
It's so crazy because, Zach, I think when I came over to Hyper, you really showed me that even having a channel that's not necessarily as big as some of these other YouTube channels that kind of put their hands up like, oh, no, we can't do anything. Those channels have the finances and the people and the staff to actually moderate their comments, and they chose not to.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and you were so specific about, like, that's not going to happen here.
Yeah, it's a tough decision to make. I'm like, I'm not going to lie. I have to have meetings with our investors sometimes and be like, yo, I'm sorry, but we can't. And they're with me on it. Believe me, that was part of the original mission of the company. But it is definitely a decision because we know that some of our choices have led to less viewers. We know that. We could have more viewers. We could then open ourselves up to more brands by having more viewers. Our thought process is, well, those brands might not be as happy with us. So let's create a platform that might have less numbers but higher engagement, which we've also learned leads to more revenue.
Mm-hmm.
If they're comfortable, if they're a more mature individual, they're more likely to support you through revenue.
That's true.
It's a plus minus kind of thing. But you also create a situation where we can have people come on and speak their opinion and talk about really heavy things and not worry about any negativity coming back because that we just don't let it fly. It's just not going to happen. So you're safe in that space to speak your mind.
I wanted to say, so with Facebook now also doing live gaming and things, like what do you see as far as the future of Twitch? Like where is it moving to?
There's places I want it to move to and there's where I think it will go. And I think unfortunately those are very different. You know, obviously I'm biased because I create a very specific type of content that honestly might not last on that platform forever. It might be I need something new to come out that hasn't been invented yet to support the kind of content I'm wanting to make. But, you know, with the Drake Ninja situation at Fortnite, you know, that gets talked about and it brought a ton of people onto the platform.
And for people that don't know that...
Yeah, so Ninja is a huge streamer on Twitch
who
is known for... Mm-hmm. He has actually broke the subscriber record on Twitch.
a lot.
Like, he basically
tenfold.
Does make estimated 500,000 a month, and that's only if people use the base level subscription, which I know for a fact they haven't. And so he's been so big, and when he broke this record, obviously, you know, celebs are starting to find out, and he played with Drake. Drake wasn't even shown
on it broke records.
It did immediately.
Yeah. But what was cool about that, and I think will hopefully continue to happen, is it brings a whole new audience to Twitch. And also when you have someone like Drake on Twitch, it doesn't make it have that weird social stigma of like, oh, this is a nerdy thing. It's like, oh no, this is a cool thing. Because everyone plays video games. Oh, everyone plays video games. But there's like these weird tiers that people socially put in their head that is like, oh, that's too nerdy for me. Yeah. But when we make
That's my channel.
Yeah. But when you make it more acceptable, when you make it more like there's a huge tabletop community. If they only knew that they
haven't
come
figured
to
that
Twitch.
One out yet. Yeah, they haven't figured that one out. That's what we're trying to break into. I mean, Gen Con's huge every year. Right. Most of the people I meet at Gen Con don't know what Twitch is still to this day. And it's not very inviting to them, so I don't necessarily disagree with their
output. Twitch have a presence at Gen Con?
None. Okay. I've been working on that. But yeah, it's not. Like... I mean, now they're going to be pulling out of a lot of those cons. I think now they're just going to be mainly doing TwitchCon. They'll have booths at those things, but I know that this PAX East was like one of the first big cons where they haven't had a media presence at all, and that was a huge surprise for everyone. But, you know, I think they're going to be trying to figure out, because that stuff costs money for them to run.
Yeah.
It costs money, and it costs a lot of money. So they've got people now like this Ninja situation where it's blowing up. So obviously from a business standpoint, somebody's going to go, well, that's great. Yeah. Let's focus on that. Mm-hmm. That doesn't really go well with my goals. But I'm happy for the company because more people coming on the platform could trickle down to me, possibly, if they can find me. But otherwise, you know, it's going to make things a little interesting for the type of content I make. But games aren't going to stop. They're going to keep growing. So I think this aspect of the people playing them are going to be more famous in the games themselves is just going to keep getting bigger and bigger and bigger. I don't see that stopping anytime soon. As far as live interactive content creation, I think it's going to move probably away from Twitch a little bit and possibly start showing up more on television. Things like Netflix and Hulu are going to start adopting these practices. That's my long-term goal. I'd love to see somebody. It'd be real smart if it was Amazon, considering they own Twitch.
Right,
but,
you
know,
right.
A lot of misconceptions happen there with how Amazon and Twitch. I hear so many people tell me, like, oh, Amazon's got their hands so deep at Twitch and all this stuff. I'm like, I kind of wish they were deeper, man. I'd love to be able to log onto my Amazon Fire and or log into my Amazon app and see Twitch or shows on Twitch. Mm-hmm. There aren't. There's no presence of that whatsoever. Comixology is owned by Amazon. There's no communication on between the two. Like Amazon's always been pretty big on like that wing is that wing, this wing is this wing. They've integrated new features like Twitch Prime, stuff like that, but they could be going way deeper and they're not. So it's I think people just overreact because they see changes and they're like, that must be Amazon. It's or it's just Twitch growing, you know, 100%. Trying to grow as a company.
Man,
that
that's
wraps
very
up
exciting.
Nice.
Yeah, that wraps up nicely. So where can people find you, Zach?
On HyperRPG, twitch.tv/HyperRPG. That's literally where I'm at. Every
Are
day,
you
all
streaming
time.
Every day?
Every day, pretty much. Sometimes on the weekends, mostly Monday through Friday, about 40 hours of live content a week. There's always something live, though, something playing.
Yeah.
Always.
Yeah. Well,
and then your handle is at @hyper_RPG.
On Twitter,
Yeah.
Remember that underscore. I had it in my profile without the underscore.
There's some dude that's, you know, HyperRPG since 2010 that won't give it up. We can't find who owns it. I've been trying really hard
on
that one.
I feel you. Danny Fernandez blocked me. The guy. He blocked me. He's
someone's just
at Ms. Danny Fernandez.
Someone is squatting on just iffy. Plain iffy. And I've tried everything. Twitter has no rule against squatting. Like, they literally, and I would have to get a copyright on iffy to yank it. Like, they're like, you need a copyright.
I have a trademark on HyperRPG and I still can't get it.
Really?
What?
I've been able to.
Is he active at all?
No, not since 2010. He's had one tweet since 2010.
Wow.
Listeners,
and they won't
please
let you yank
help
it.
Us. Write this guy.
Nah, but, you know, one day. We'll get there.
Well, I am at Ms. MS Danny Fernandez, and I was going to say, make sure, thanks to everyone that's been reviewing us, and Apple Podcasts gave us a big shout out. That is so dope. Thank you so much. If y'all haven't yet, it really helps us and helps get you know, more eyes on this podcast. Tell a friend about it.
Oh, yeah.
But if you could go and just take 1 minute of your day and review the podcast, if it's a good review.
Only if it's good.
I know. Yeah, no, I've seen the haters trickle in. There's like, just because like, if it's a one-star review and someone's saying why they're giving a one-star review, I'm like, all right, you might really hate it. But there's just like ghost one-star reviews where it's like, okay, that must be my ex. but also, you know, I'm gonna set some stretch goals. I've just thought about it after doing today, but on Anthony Carboni's podcast, he gave us these cool pins. So like, you know, at 100 reviews, I'm gonna drop some stickers. At 250, I'm thinking I'm getting the pins. And at 1K reviews, I want to get a vinyl figure of me and Danny.
Hell yeah.
Because I got connects now. I got vinyl figure connects. So
I thought you were going to say like a Varsity Letterman's jacket.
Oh, no, that's 100K reviews.
Okay, we'll do
but
it.
But yeah, we'll add each of those. At the vinyl figure, one or two, depending on how many I have to order to get it, lucky listeners will get Iffy and Danny vinyl figures at 1K reviews. By the way, I'm Iffy Wadiway on Twitter at Iffy Wadiway, IFYNWADIWE. Make sure you follow Nerdificent on Facebook and on Instagram and on Twitter. And, you know, tell us what you'd like to see. A lot of y'all have been telling us, and we have been
writing it down.
Yeah, we've writing it down. We got some cool apps coming, and we will be tackling the stuff you're throwing at us.
And I would say, too, that if people ask you guys questions about Twitch after this, like, feel free to loop me into those conversations. I could talk about this stuff. Well, it's literally all I do. Yeah. So I could talk about it nonstop.
Hit up Zach.
We'll do, yeah. And check out the Hyper RPG channel.
Do it.
I know y'all.
Oh, there's some gems in there. There's some hidden gems of Danny and Iffy.
Oh, God.
Yeah. If you look around just a little bit, there's some hidden gems.
If you type in, also if you type, because Iffy and I were on, we had a couple of shows, but we were on a show called Vanquish. So if you look that up in Giphy, you'll find some good gifts of us.
All right, y'all.
Friends.
Stay nerdy. Thanks for listening.